Today we have the pleasure of hearing from Dr. Donald Whitney. Dr. Whitney is professor of biblical spirituality and associate dean at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He's written several books related to biblical spirituality, including Spiritual Disciplines for the Christian Life and Praying the Bible, two books that I have personally found to be extremely helpful in my own Christian life and have found beneficial to recommend to others as well. It's such a joy, Dr. Whitney, to be able to take a few moments and talk with you about your recent work, Family Worship.
Thanks, Chris. It's good to be with you.
Now, most recently, like I just mentioned, Crossway has published your book, Family Worship. As a very new father, and also as one that teaches youth and family ministry, I'm tremendously interested in this book. So let me begin by asking, what led you to write this book?
Yeah, well, it's an interesting journey. I grew up in a very conservative, Bible-believing Baptist church, but never heard about family worship, never saw it anywhere. And it wasn't, I think, until after graduation from seminary, and I was in the pastorate, that as I began to read and study in preparation for sermons and just in my general reading, I came across the concept of family worship more so from older writers, but I began to see it more and more frequently, especially among those that I considered my heroes, both dead and alive. And I realized what a gap there was, at least in my own awareness of this particular teaching that apparently most of the church for 2,000 years had believed to be the teaching of the Bible. So I began to study this more intentionally. Then I gave a message on this more than 10 years ago. And from that message, I decided to develop that into a small book because I saw the still present need for exposure to this, at least among those that I regularly was around. So that's how the book came to be.
Yeah. And I think you're kind of hinting at this a little bit, but maybe we should ask the question why. What is a reason, or what is the reason, that a family should practice family worship?
Well, the main reason is God deserves to be worshipped daily in our homes by our families. And that's the thesis of the book. But also, it is the teaching of the Bible. Now, one of the reasons perhaps why it has been neglected is that there's no explicit verse in the Bible that teaches family worship by that sort of name. But the church has universally understood the Bible to teach that implicitly, and indeed all through the Bible you can point to passages that imply the existence of family worship. So you can't expect people to do what they've never been taught to do. Mm. And if they've never been taught about family worship, you can't expect them to practice it. So I think perhaps it's because of a specific text. And also, you know, I guess it speaks to a lack of biblical literacy to some degree and a historical lack of historical awareness. Hmm. But though all those things have contributed to the great decline, and of course in our own age there's the you know, practical aspect of everyone being so busy, having so many demands, and the family being so spread out with activities during the day and in the week.
Now, when you say family worship, I would imagine for many families, those you know sitting in our pews might think that this is a bit of a daunting task to worship together as a family, especially if we encourage them to do it with some regularity. So when you say family worship, what would you say that primarily consists of?
It's just three simple elements: reading the Bible, praying together, and singing.
Hmm. Yeah.
And if we had time, I could explain why I think that would be the biblical teaching on the subject. But just about 10 minutes, on average, I would say, with most families, without any preparation, just simply reading the Bible, praying together, and singing.
Yeah, and also being a new father, you know, I find all this very fascinating about being able to worship together as a family, praying together, reading together, singing together. Now, on kind of a practical element, what type of advice would you give to those that maybe have very young children as opposed to those that maybe have children more in their teenage years?
Yeah, the younger they are, the more you're going to want to use narrative passages of the Bible. You're talking about a more brief time, especially if they're very young preschoolers. Hmm. But I would argue that even if you have a newborn, if you have a 15-month-old who doesn't even know what you're saying, at the very least, they're learning something. And if we could put it into adult language, it might be like this. They're thinking, I don't know what it is we do here every night. Dad reads from this leatherback book, and I have no idea what he's saying. We sing together. I like that part. And they put their heads down and close their eyes and talk, and I have no idea what they're doing. But whatever it is, it must be important because we do it every night. So they're learning, even at 15 months, they're learning that this is one of the routines of life. This is something very important because we make time for it every single day.
Now, and how would you contrast that with maybe those in their teenage years? What would you do differently for those older children?
Well, you're going to obviously have the opportunity to be more mature in terms of the reading of the entire Bible, explaining it, asking questions on their level, allowing them to ask questions, and treating them with the intellectual level that they have. You're going to conduct family worship on a level that is commensurate with their ability.
Yeah, absolutely. To continue on, I noticed one of the chapter titles in your book is called Here the Reformation Must Begin, Family Worship and Church History. And for our listeners and those that read our site, I was wondering, you know, as you look at this throughout church history, was there anything that you found specifically surprising about family worship as you looked at it in light of church history?
Well, just that it was universally understood by the church for 2,000 years to be the teaching of the Bible. We tend to think of ourselves as, and in one sense it's true, you know, to have the cumulative wisdom of two millennia of the church. And so, indeed, we do stand on the shoulders of giants, but we have the benefit of their insight, their knowledge, their experience, and to which we can add our own. But it's kind of humbling to realize, hey, at least in my circles, most of the church has seen this clearly for 2,000 years. And we haven't. And so we're behind. We're the ones who dropped the ball. We're the ones who haven't understood this to be the teaching of Scripture. And so it surprised me how prevalent it was among virtually all those that I considered my heroes. And I thought, why have I not heard of this before? Why have I not been taught this? Why haven't I seen it? But just the prevalence of it was probably the biggest surprise.
Yeah. So I suppose in some ways the surprise actually comes in our contemporary times as opposed to that of church history.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, we've talked a lot about the worship of the biological or the nuclear family together. What connection would you say is there between the worship of the nuclear family and the worship of the church family together?
Well, historically, and our confessions bear this out, the church has understood worship to be something that's to be done congregationally, privately, and by the family. Sometimes the confessions and theologians will use the term of corporate or congregational, private, and social worship. Social meaning involving someone other than yourself, but something less than the entire church. Again, and there are our 1689 Confession of Faith among the Baptists, the Second Lenten Confession, mentions this, the Westminster Confession of the Presbyterians. They recognize these three spheres of worship, and it's a recognition that Jesus is Lord over every part of our life and every relationship, and he's to be worshipped, whether we're speaking of ourselves as individuals, whether we're talking about the entire church, or that group that we regularly associate with kind of in between. That small group that is our family. So there's that common bond that Jesus is Lord over all. He's to be recognized and worshipped as Lord in every sphere of life, whether it's in the home or whether it's in the church. So it's not saying that Jesus is not Lord, does not have to be worshipped in a big part of our life. Rather, it's recognizing the universal lordship of Jesus and his worthiness to receive worship in any setting.
Yeah, and I think you're really emphasizing something important. So often we talk about individual worship or we talk about corporate worship. It seems like we're kind of missing that in between a family worship, and I appreciate you talking to the subject and bringing this to light for us.
Yeah, I'm glad to do that.
Yeah. Now, I know much of your writing has been done in the area of spiritual disciplines. In what ways would you say there's an overlap between, say, what you write in spiritual disciplines for the Christian life and then what you write in your book, Family Worship?
Well, like I just mentioned, with the three different spheres of worship, I've written spiritual disciplines for the Christian life, which is primarily for the individual Christian and their personal devotional life. I wrote another book after that called Spiritual Disciplines Within the Church, those spiritual disciplines in which we engage others, usually the local church. So, for example, we're to pray alone. The Bible teaches that. The Bible also teaches we're to pray with the church. We are to get into the Bible for ourselves individually. It's a personal spiritual discipline. We're also to hear the Bible read and preached and taught with the church. That's an interpersonal spiritual discipline. So I've had those two poles covered, if you will, those disciplines related to your individual spirituality and those with our congregational spirituality. But it wasn't for some time after that I dealt with this in terms of familial spirituality, those biblical practices in which we can engage the family. Because, see, some of the spiritual disciplines by nature are congregational. The Lord's Supper, for example, Jesus said, do this in remembrance of me. So we're to discipline ourselves to do that. But we're not to serve the Lord's Supper to ourselves in our personal devotional life, because it's been given to the church. And so I believe we should experience that only with the church or under the authority of the local church, not alone, nor with the family. And so there is a unique sphere of some of the disciplines with the entire church body, and there are some that are rather unique to the individual. But there are three practices regarding worship that are taught in the Bible we can do whether we're alone with God, whether we're in the whole church, or whether we're with a family, and that is to read the Bible, to pray, and to sing. So those are elements of worship that we can do whether alone, the whole church, or with the family. And so it gets back to your earlier question of why these elements, or these particular elements, why not another element? I think these are the three that the Bible teaches we should do in worship, but do not require the whole church to do them.
Hmm. You know, I find that very helpful. You know, mentioned before, me and my wife, we just had our son, and he's about 4.5 months old, and we've already tried to start a little bit of this family worship practice. Right now, we've been using Sally Lloyd Jones's The Jesus Storybook Bible. So,
yeah,
with that, yeah. Well, and my question for you would be: is there any resources that you would recommend for families as they try to prepare to read the Bible and sing it and pray it with their families?
Well, there are a number of them out there, and in the book, I have them noted. And I'm trying to find some here quickly. These change, of course, with every quarter as new publications come out. But it will depend somewhat on the depend in large part, really, on the age of the children. So if you have preschoolers, a picture Bible, sort of like the Big Picture Story Bible, David Helm did that just a couple of years ago. It's a good resource from Crossway. The Jesus Storybook Bible, and I love the subtitle of that one, Every Story Whispers His Name, is a very good resource for children from, let's say, ages 4 to 8. If you have elementary school children, something like Marty Machowski's Gospel Story Bible is a good one. And the one we use with our daughter has been used since 1935. Countless families have used the one by Catherine Voss. That's Catherine with a C. V.O.S., her husband is a famous theologian. Catherine Voss did the Child's Story Bible, and that's for a little bit older children, let's say 4 to 10. Another one is Kevin DeYoung's The Biggest Story, and this is also written for children. Now, if a person wants just the Bible, they don't want these because in these many of these cases, they condense or abridge the biblical stories to some degree. But you might find that with some younger children, especially, you might find them helpful. So there, you know, you ask around, you investigate, there are a number of good resources like that out there, but I think generally you want to think of them in terms of for younger children, preschool, early elementary age children.
Well, that's very helpful. Now, as we come to a close, what would you say is the most important thing to remember? You know, as you're pastoring, as you're ministering to families, encouraging them to do this, what's the most important thing to remember when practicing family worship?
Well, two things really come to mind. One is consistency. Hmm. Every family misses sometimes, but you try to be consistent. When you miss, you get right back to it. But as a part of that, to realize that the effects of family worship tend to be cumulative, not episodic. In other words, in the thousands of times that we as family worship with my daughter before she left home and now is expecting her first child, not one time ever would I have walked away from family worship saying, you know, that the presence of the Lord was so very powerful among us tonight, or, you know, we just sensed atmospherically the presence of the Lord. It was never that way. Hmm. In fact, far more often than not, we finished family worship, and I wondered, you know, if anything good happened as a result of that tonight. And because what I'd like for people to remember is it happens in real life, in the home. And you have children that are rolling around on the floor, and you're having to tell them to pay attention. You're having to tell the older ones, hey, put your phone down. I'm trying to read the Bible here. Family worship happens in the family room with the family, in real family life. And so the things that go on in that room with your family at other times are the same kinds of things that happen when you're trying to do family worship. And there's the temptation to think nothing is being accomplished. But after you have done that consistently, you begin to see the fruit, especially as they get older. And I tell a story about when my daughter graduated from high school. She graduated from a small classical Christian school, and the tradition there is that the parents hand them the diploma and say a few words of encouragement and so forth to the child, and the graduate then says some prepared remarks back to the parents. And I have the transcript of what my daughter had prepared to say, but when she turned to me, she couldn't finish what she said as she began to talk about family worship, but rather she just collapsed on my shoulder and cried harder than any time I had ever seen her since she was a preschooler.
Oh, wow.
And I have a picture of this, and it's my favorite photograph of the two of us. Mm-hmm. And I looked at what, you know, she had written, and she talked about how much it had meant to her that we'd had family worship every night of her life. Well, she didn't remember exactly correctly there, but all of her life she had had family worship, and that it meant so much to her. And when you place that against those thousands of nights when I felt like nothing good happened, you realize that the effects are cumulative. They're almost never episodic. You almost never finish family worship and say, boy, something great happened tonight.
Wow.
It's that consistency that you really have to measure yourself by, and in the end, the Lord will do far more than you ever realize.
Wow. That's such a wonderful testimony, too. And we appreciate not only that you are writing these books for us, but also that you've modeled it for us, you know, in your own testimony there with your daughter.
Well, thank you. It's one of the great privileges of life, and on this side of it, you really miss it when they're little like that, but it's very gratifying to see what the Lord does in the long run.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Whitney, I want to thank you so much for your time and your contribution, you know, to the Christian community with your books and your testimony and your ministry. I know your books have been a tremendous contribution to my own life and also for the readers of our site as well. And I just want to thank you so much for sharing with us on the topic of family worship today.
You're very welcome, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
All right, thank you.